A knock on the table and call the meeting to order. My name is John Snyder, Spokane City Council, your AWC representative on the commission, and I'm going to lead the meeting today. And I want to start before we do introductions by introducing our very newest member. That would be Commissioner Caroline Schwartz from Grant County. Caroline, please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about why you'd like to be on the commission.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe you were going to ask me for my life history. But anyway, you don't want to go there. Only because we don't have time. But thank you. I'm very honored to be on this commission. I've been I'm in my sixth year of being a county commissioner. I am from a rural county. Grant County has 2,600 miles of roads that just the county maintains, and I-90 runs right through us. But we have special needs over in eastern Washington that some people don't have over on the west side. I hope that I bring maybe a different perspective or an added perspective to this council. So anyway, I'm really pleased to be here.
Well, welcome. Welcome aboard. And with that, why don't we just keep going around the room with introductions.
Jim Swanger, the judiciary from Clark County.
Mullins. I'm the Governor's Policy Advisor on Public Safety and Government Operations.
Good morning. I'm Martin Mueller. I'm Assistant Secretary with the State Department of Health, sitting in for John Wiesman today.
Derek Rundell, Director of the Traffic Safety Commission. And thanks for everybody for being here.
Jerry Nelson, Traffic Safety Commission.
Hi, I'm Chris Medill, Deputy Director of the Commission.
I'm John Nisbet. I'm the Director of Traffic Operations with the Department of Transportation, here representing Secretary Peterson.
I'm Alan Jones, Director of Student Transportation for the Superintendent of Public Instruction, Randy Dorn.
Kevin Quigley, Secretary of the Department of Social and Health Services.
And Caroline Swartz, Grant County.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hey. How are you?
It's good to be seen. Great to be back. Thanks for the great work you do.
We're glad to have you back. Thank you. Now let's keep going around the room, starting back there.
I'm Captain James Riley, Field Operations Headquarters.
Ron Rupkin, Assistant Chief of Field Operations for the State Patrol.
Hi, good morning. My name is Etika. I am a Program Manager here at the Traffic Safety Commission.
Debbie Bester, I'm a Program Manager here at the Traffic Safety Commission.
And I'm Joanna Van Dyke, a Program Manager with the Traffic Safety Commission.
Ty Trudeau, State Farm. I'm on the Young Driver Task Force. I'm also State Farm.
Kevin Hayward, State Farm agent in Lacey.
MJ Hott, Traffic Safety Commission.
Jerry Novello, Traffic Safety Commission.
Mike Gale, Program Manager, Traffic Safety Commission.
Marsha Masters, Target Zero Manager, Kitsap County.
Dave Wright, Target Zero Manager in Washington County.
Scott Waller, Division of Social and Health, Department of Social and Health Services.
I'm John Pagel, I'm the Target Zero Manager for South King County.
Great, thank you all for coming. We have a sign-up sheet that's being passed around. I want to make sure we get everyone in the room on it. So look for that. It's being moving around right now. That'll bring us to our second item, which is our 2016 grants overview. Chris, could you start us off with that?
Okay, thank you. So it's my privilege today to present to you the great work and time and effort of a lot of people in creating our annual investment plan for grants. So I put together a few slides here. For some of you, this will be a review. Last year I presented some similar slides, just to give an overview of our funding mechanism, how it works, and the process we go about in distributing our funding. But I think for Commissioner Schwartz, this will be particularly important that you get a better understanding of how we operate. So our federal funding comes from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. And we get really two sections of the funding. The first is what we call Section 402 here, and this is the general section of money that we get. And we can use this money for essentially any traffic safety project in the state. The other section is what the federal government calls the Section 405 High Priority Programs. And there's really six sections within there. They're very specific to programs that we administer. And in Washington, we qualify for four of them: occupant protection, impaired driving, traffic records, and motorcycles. We do not qualify for distracted or for the graduated driver licensing programs, mostly because those in statute set out fairly stringent standards for our state laws, and we don't need those. So we get four of these sections through the high priority program. This is a little bit of a busy slide. The big takeaway from this is that when we went from our multi-year transportation bill, which was previously called Safety Lou, to the current one, which you'll hear more about from John Nisbet today, it's called MAP 21, there was a big shift in the way we receive our funding and in the timing of it. So under Safety Lou, we used to receive a whole bunch of different disbursements throughout the fiscal year. And you can see a lot of it, the size of the arrows is meant to sort of indicate the relative size of the disbursement. A lot of it came at the end of the federal fiscal year for which it was intended. So it created a lot of difficulties for us as we're trying to forecast how much money do we have in this fiscal year to allocate to projects. MAP 21 does a much better job of this, where in fiscal year 14, we got really four main disbursements. They were earlier in the fiscal year, so it allowed us to do some better forecasting and a little bit better planning when it came to developing our investment plan. So this slide gives you over the last 4 years how much we've allocated to traffic safety projects in the state. You can see for 13 and 14, we're right between $11.5 and $12 million. For federal fiscal year 15, this was the year where we allocated over $2 million in a one-time spend down because of the change from Safety Lou to MAP 21. There was no longer the need to carry forward a bunch of money from those late year disbursements. So we did a one-time spend down. We are currently in that fiscal year. We're doing pretty well in terms of our expenditures that will reach close to $14 million for this fiscal year. But for this coming year, for 16, we're back down right around our traditional levels of between $11.5 and $12 million. I want to give you just a quick overview. In states around the country, there's really two main ways that NHTSA money is planned for and dispersed. The first is states administer an open competitive process. So it's almost like an RFP process. They make an announcement of available funds, they take in proposals, they score them, they review them, they score them, and then they make awards. There's a high perception of fairness in this process, and there's less centralized control of the money in this sort of process, which is open competitive. The other side of it is this process where the Highway Safety Office really develops the investment plan. Our neighbor to the south does this, where they pull together a stakeholder group, they look at the data, they decide where they want to invest the money, and they create an investment plan based on that approach. There's some perception of unfairness, especially for those that may not have a voice in those stakeholder groups. And there's certainly more centralized control over the money. Because we in Washington love to think we're unique, of course we don't do either. We adopt what ends up being sort of a hybrid approach. And this is kind of the first year that we've formally said this is a hybrid approach. Because what we include a call for proposals. We actively solicit from local organizations project proposals. So, for instance, pedestrian is a good example of that. MJ, back here, worked with two counties to try and solicit their support in building a project for pedestrian safety. So we actively look for areas where we can invest money in particular program areas. We also, in this year, this is the first time we've done it, we incorporated kind of a negotiation phase after the proposal period closed. So you'll see this as I get into the process. We as staff actually identified several proposals in a first review that we wanted to go back and speak with the proposers about to see about potentially incorporating various aspects of Target Zero strategies or potentially investments that we traditionally don't make, whether it's large equipment investments, to see whether we can still do the project without those sorts of expenditures. And then we created a scoring matrix, and I'll show you in full disclosure, we are not scoring all the proposals, and that's part of the hybrid approach, which is there's four criteria under which we're not scoring proposals this year. And these are the four. If it's required under state or federal regulations, we're not submitting it to the scoring matrix. If it's necessary for our program operations, we did not score it. If it was part of a portfolio or program-specific funding, and the example of this is traffic records, under that 405 program that we get. It's a very specific set of funding that has strict guidelines about how we can invest that money. We've built an advisory team called the Traffic Records Committee that essentially vets all those projects for that funding pool, and then they forward essentially their proposals to us in terms of the investments for the following fiscal year. So there's two levels. There's an executive level and a manager's level within the Traffic Records Committee. They work on those projects on hammering out an investment plan, and then we get that essentially as the investment portfolio for the coming year. And then the last one is, if it's part of a prior contractual or verbal agreement, we did not score it. Now, the example for this is there are a few projects, and they aren't very common, that we commit to for multiple fiscal years. Because of the logistics of implementing it, it might go beyond one fiscal year, and so we contractually obligate ourselves. And again, this is very rare, but we do contractually obligate ourselves for more than one fiscal year. And then in the case of verbal commitments, for instance, in Clark County, when we funded the Clark County DUI court, we have a standing procedure that we'll commit to funding a DUI court for 3 years. So we'll say we gave the Clark County DUI court 3 years of funding, essentially to stand it up. And to Clark County's credit, they went to their commission and they got some sustainable funding, and they've maintained that program since our funding went away. So a quick review is we got 70 total proposals, 47 of them we scored, 28 of those we were recommending for funding, 19 we did not recommend for funding, two of which are ineligible for our use of funding, and then there were 23 projects that were not scored but we're recommending for funding, and I'll get into just a little bit of detail about each of those groups. So this gives you just a quick overview of how the process works. We get those proposals. We have our first staff review. We then do our follow-up discussions with proposers. So we identified, I think this year, 14 proposals that we wanted to go back and get more information about or potentially see if they'd be amenable to incorporating other elements of the project. And then we had our second staff review, and we developed a draft plan that we then took to our stakeholder advisory committee. This is what we call our technical advisory committee. They met on March 31st. And commission agencies have representatives at that meeting, a couple of which are here today. We present the plan. We present an overview of every project that we're recommending funding. It takes about 7 hours. I think this year we were in this room for 7 hours as we went through all those projects. Scott Waller and the captain were here. And it was a great process. We have wonderful conversations, and we really value that part of this process, having that collective input from our commission agencies as we develop this funding package. So ultimately, here we are today at our commissioner meeting, where we hope that after a review that you'll approve the investment plan. We'll go right into this is our annual investment plan. We'll administer the funds, provide oversight and monitoring throughout the fiscal year, and then ultimately produce a summary report at the end of the year. So as I finish up here, I'll give you highlights of these four categories of projects. The first is operations for our office. We do fund a significant amount of our office operations from the federal money that we receive. Our high visibility enforcement campaigns, which is sort of the hallmark strategy that we conduct here in Washington. We have projects with statewide impact and then projects with localized impact. So this gives you just a quick snapshot of how those broke out. You can see for high visibility enforcement, we're right under 40% of our total budget goes toward high visibility enforcement. So that's law enforcement and media outreach. For our agency operations, it's 18%. Statewide impact, those projects represent about a third of our total budget. And then projects with localized impact, and then others, which are mostly localized impact, but a few that straddle both statewide and local, are 7% and 3% respectively. So the last few slides just give you a break out of those four areas. High visibility enforcement. For local law enforcement overtime, we are recommending $1.4 million throughout the fiscal year to fund overtime patrols of the various emphasis areas that we help oversee. So that includes DUI, seatbelt, distracted driving. New this year is a motorcycle campaign where we're focused on motorcycles and some of the adverse behaviors that they practice. We're also proposing that we have a category called flex funding in which local areas can determine the emphasis area in which they're going to enforce. And they work with our media contractor, but also trying to generate earned media of those localized high visibility enforcement efforts. So that's new for this year. And then we have Target Zero teams, which will finish up at $148,000 for this year for local. We also have here enforcement for WSP at just a little over $900,000. Sorry, Chief, $900,000. Whoops. And that includes categories very similar to the locals, the DUI, seatbelt, distracted, motorcycle, and flex. And then our media campaigns, we match at about 50%. 50% for enforcement and 50% for media. So that's really been shown to be best practice. We're investing in the outreach, but also in the enforcement of the law. So again, that represents about 39% of our total budget for the year. These are projects with statewide impact, and I won't go into a whole detail about these other than to say some of these were required to administer, such as the Child Passenger Safety Program. That's required in MAP 21. Traffic records, of course, is required. We have prosecutors in the state that help us interpret case law and train prosecutors, particularly for impaired driving cases. We are conducting, the first time in probably close to a decade, a statewide conference for traffic safety, which I think you got to save the date in your packets. That's October 13th through the 15th. We have our local network of coordinators. This is the federal portion. We also get $668,000 per fiscal year of state money that we put toward the salaries and benefits of local coordinators that are embedded throughout the state. We have a statewide law enforcement liaison. We're proposing to hire a single contractor based on what's come out of the National Law Enforcement Liaison Program, which says best practice is to have one position that helps manage law enforcement relationships throughout the state. So that's the direction we've chosen to propose for law enforcement liaisons. We've got motorcycle program, our impaired driving section of the Washington State Patrol, which funds the Ignition Interlock Program, Drug Recognition Expert Program. We, of course, are right in the middle of our Target Zero plan revision. Mike Gable, who we stole away from Department of Licensing, is helping to run that project. So we're excited to get going on our revision of the Target Zero plan. We also have a project here to rewrite the driver exam for the state, which is in dire need of more questions and better questions. And then we administer a traffic safety equipment grant to WASPIC and also to tribal law enforcement in the state. Just a couple highlights for our locally submitted projects. We've got some speeding demonstration projects in Kitsap and Thurston. And we have one of the great takeaways from our advisory committee meeting in March 31st was that we're going to partner with the Department of Transportation in identifying an area which they have shown has high-speed crashes and where they've done some engineering fixes. And we're going to follow on with enforcement and education after those fixes have been made. So that would be the one to-be-determined area where we'll work closely with Department of Transportation to identify that.
Chris, I would just add to that. One of our focus areas from just a highway operations and design has been how do you shape the highway to achieve the desired operating speed? And so using engineering type applications, this helps us combine that with the enforcement piece to try to actually implement, get a change in how drivers are using that facility. So I think that's a very good thing.
Good. We do too. It's been something we've discussed for many years, and this will be the first year where we're really going to make a coordinated effort to conduct this project and potentially make it more of a staple of our work together. Okay, I'm just about out of time here. We got a couple of others, the pedestrian education enforcement in Seattle. We have a great project out of Clark County, which is a collaborative enforcement and education project for impaired driving. We have some tribal traffic safety education in the Caldwell Tribe. We have education enforcement of underage drinking in Thurston and Okanagan counties, and the Home Safe Bar program, a real innovative program in Spokane and Pierce. Okay, and then WTSC operations, we have...
Chris, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
How did you choose the counties that got the grant money?
So this is part of that open solicitation. So in part, we were reaching out beforehand to try and generate some projects from local counties, but in a certain sense, we're sort of at the mercy of those that submit projects. So we're doing our best to beat the bushes, but these projects all come, they're submitted through the open competitive process from local agencies.
Chris, is that true for the tribes as well?
Yes, that's right.
Do you think the locals know that that's available to them? I mean, Thurston County seems to be really pretty good at it, but because we're probably here, but do you think that the counties know that this is available potentially?
I think it varies throughout the state. Like you pointed out, Thurston County absolutely knows. And part of that is dependent upon our network of coordinators, how strong the coalition is there, and how much they're able to drum up some ideas for locally led projects in those areas. So I do think it varies throughout.
Maybe
the state.
That's something the Association of Washington Counties can help with too in getting the word out for future grants, not for this round, but
yeah, that's a great connection.
Making sure that they
but
know.
But it seems every year that the grant proposals and that communication goes out to a much broader group of people, and so. You know, you try to get that word out through WASPIC and through the various associations to be able to make sure that people know about the grants. Thurston County may change a little bit for the next round because Jerry Navilo, who is in the back there, was, I think, the one that wrote those grants, weren't you? So it's just, it really, really depends on each different location and then the specific counties that do submit the grants.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, we made it a habit lately of stealing good talent from other people. Okay, our operations, great question, thanks. Thank you, Pat. Our operations include salary and benefits for staff at $1.8 million. Our research and data division, this is for various survey projects and research that they do. And then general communications, which helps with our websites and other applications that we run. I want to highlight this project here, our grants management system. We have gone through an extensive, almost 18 months of developing requirements. We've had a project team, several of which are sitting here with us, who have helped develop the requirements that are going into our electronic grants management system. I'll tell you, everything you see here and everything we do with that $12 million each year, we're managing it in Excel. That's a little scary. I don't want to manage that sort of stuff in Excel. We have great options. We went out to bid in December, or actually I think it was November, and we announced a successful vendor in February, which was actually the lowest bid that we received. We got bids all the way from $1 million down to $70,000 for our project. Mm-hmm. And we selected the $70,000 winning bidder, and there was no question among the project team that theirs was the best. So, the morning before their presentation, I was getting ready for work, and I was sweating it because we'd gone through a couple of other proposals, and the cost was high, and we weren't quite sure about the solution, and we got in, and the vendor here nailed it. And so we got a low-cost, wonderful solution that we'll be implementing over the next year to automate a whole lot of what you're seeing today. Not only this part, but also our management and monitoring of those grants throughout the fiscal year will all be within a system that is commonly used by granting organizations throughout the country. Okay, just a couple of other things and I'm done. The investment plan includes 10 projects, which were substantially revised based on that period where we went back and negotiated or had some discussions with the proposer. 60% of proposals submitted by local entities with localized impact were recommended for funding. And then, of course, our successful bidder for the grants management system was well under our anticipated amount. So the $200,000 you see here is actually more than we need for the system. And then we need the grants management system. We're drowning in paper, we're drowning in Excel, and for us, it's a wonderful initiative that we'll be engaged in throughout this year, making sure we make a successful implementation. So with that, I'm done. Take any questions that you might have.
Questions? All right, thanks, Chris. So that brings us to item three, which is the grant approval that we saw presented. Do you have any questions about the approval?
I have one. As we were reviewing the information with Secretary Peterson, one of her comments and ultimately a request for the commission to consider was, as we were looking at the enforcement part and kind of the emphasis areas associated with that, her question was, is there an opportunity to do something targeting pedestrian safety and, you know, pedestrian laws, that kind of thing? And would ask that the commission consider whether within this grant process there would be an opportunity for us to work with the Traffic Safety Commission on doing some kind of targeted enforcement awareness kind of effort focused on pedestrians and pedestrian safety.
So let me make sure I'm understanding this correct. Perhaps a carve out in the grant process to try or pilot pedestrian programs?
To do something associated with that, yes.
Okay.
And whether it's a carve out or I don't know the funding part where there might be opportunities there, but wanted to, again, just to have that quick discussion, whether there is a opportunity within this process to do something that way. And I think it would be something Department of Transportation partnering with Traffic Safety Commission and looking for local partnerships, again, to focus that in that way.
So thoughts from other commissioners on that?
So are you propose like a motion to, I know that you're not commissioner, but would you have one of the other commissioners want to propose a motion for some type of, you know, funds that are available to do some type of a project?
Yes, I, you know, not exactly knowing the process piece of it, but yes, something along those lines.
You know,
that's appropriate.
What we could do is perhaps we could work on something for the next meeting that maybe had a little more definition to bring back for the commissioners to consider. It's probably hard to consider something that's too open-ended. We also have this session hasn't quite completed, and there's still a pedestrian review board bill that isn't totally dead. So I would volunteer to work with you on that between meetings so we can bring something back to the next commissioner meeting that maybe had some options for the commissioners to consider.
Would we do that with a motion as you're approving this proposal that would say we would work together, or would we just do it offline? Again, I'm not sure process-wise what the best approach would be. But
we could do it as, I think it would need to be a separate motion. I want to get the, probably want to just get the grants approved kind of as is for this year, and then look at doing that separately.
Because we could do, go ahead.
I would just say, in approaching that suggestion, that we definitely take a look at data that would support that particular need, and we pinpoint it down to specific areas where we're clearly having a problem, and then look to partner in those areas.
So
where does the money come from? If this is already all allocated out, the grant money, where does the money come from to do what John's asking?
So what could happen is we could approve the grant process, unless there's any questions or concerns within the grant process. If there are funds that are, you know, we could develop a motion that would maybe scope out exactly what we wanted to do. If there are funds from other projects that is available, that we could use that towards that type of an initiative.
So maybe I'm misunderstanding, John. You wanted to look at something this year. I wasn't sure if you were talking about trying to change the process for next year, but you'd like to look at possibilities for this year.
For this year, yes.
Understood.
So would it come from money that wasn't used in the projects that have been designated here?
Well, potentially the funds could come from the grant management system, that there were the funds that we're not using, that were left, that were saved from that. We could potentially use those funds to then offset or at least set for a pedestrian project.
So what happens to, you know, when you've awarded these and there's unused money, what happens to that money in a normal process? Does that come then back to the commission for redirection, or what do we do with that?
Yeah, typically there's sort of two things we can do. And that's it's a great question, because that's one of the reasons why I wanted to show the slide with the two timelines. As we're forecasting how much money we have for any given fiscal year, there is some guesswork involved in it, right? So we're trying to determine how much of current year projects might be underspent and how much of new revenue might we receive for the coming fiscal year. So we're creating an estimate. And what you see today is an estimate based off of those two things, how much we think we're going to get and how much we think will be underspent come September 30th. So typically, we're in the business of estimating in a conservative way. So at the turn of the fiscal year, more often than not, we see that we have slightly more carried forward than what we've estimated. It might be likely under $100,000 or so, but we do have some funds that will go through the fiscal year, which we've not obligated to funding. And we have two approaches to handling that. One is, if there were, in past years, we've identified projects that we'd essentially put on hold. We'd say, we're going to put them in this waiting room, essentially. And if there's new funding available, we can move forward with them in that fiscal year. Now, part of it is, can those projects be nimble enough so that come November, after we've received all the billings, and we say, well, we've got enough money, and you've got 10 months, can you actually do it? So if some of those projects are nimble enough, we have done that in the past, we've gone forward with those. In other cases, we've looked at places where we reduced funding. And at times it was with high visibility enforcement or with other projects where we said we're gonna reduce this project by $40,000. And so at other times we've said we're gonna raise that back up to what the original proposal amount was. So we've handled that in a couple of different ways. It does look like we'll have, this plan includes a $200,000 line item for the grant system. Right now, we're anticipating our need is probably somewhere around 130 to 140, based on the estimate. So we do have, even within this plan, potentially $60,000. When we came up with the plan, we hadn't awarded the successful vendor yet. So now we know that we're probably around $50,000 to $60,000 of additional funds that will not be obligated because of the vendor we selected. Yes?
I'm very excited about the idea of this pedestrian safety project, because so many of those distracted pedestrians are kids walking to school or home from school. At our national conference a couple months ago, we had a presentation, and I think it was either Virginia or North Carolina, and a project that they did. Very strong message targeting kids. I got a couple of the posters that they developed, and they were trying to push it out to other states. But I didn't bring them with me this morning, but one of them shows a kid with earbuds in, with tire tracks across his face, and the words are, "This song is to die for." But a very powerful message, and it might be something that would reduce the cost.
It's kind of morbid.
But it really, you have to get something, yeah, you know, that's strong enough to get through the kids' behavior.
Right.
And, it was pretty stunning. But I'll share that with staff, and maybe something we can cut the cost of that by developing, using theirs.
Other thoughts on this idea? So here's how I see it possibly taking shape. It sounds like we have maybe up to $60,000 that may be available. We could entertain an amended grant approval list that would set aside up to $60,000 for pedestrian safety projects to be determined at a future meeting, supported by data, as Chief Batiste requested, and consisting of the type of proposals you both described. Does that sound like something folks are interested in? If they are, if somebody besides me probably needs to make that motion as I'm running the meeting, but that seems like we've got a little bit of cushion there. If we make it, if we don't promise it at a certain level, we make it not to exceed $60,000, and then in the interim, I would volunteer if there need be a commissioner to work, help create some more definition to how we can do that. And then maybe we can look at approving it at a future meeting, probably the summer meeting, with the eye that it's got to be something nimble that can be implemented pretty quick and is ready to go.
So if we approve it in, we can approve it, you know, that up to $60,000 in this meeting, and then as the project scoped, and then it's come back to the July meeting with, you know, that, you'll still have a few months before we get the, you know, the October deadline.
Yeah.
Things can start. So we'll
can I ask a process question?
Yeah.
So your criteria that we just went through, is that one of the, does it meet one of the exceptions to not having that process that you put in place to score and?
Yeah, probably not. Just, you know, it wouldn't be anything that would be required under state or federal rules. Not necessary for operations. It's not necessarily a part of a portfolio. We don't have a contractual for operations. So this kind of project probably doesn't fit within that, so we probably want to make sure we come up with some proposal that, I mean, the benefit is pedestrians is a priority too. It's already zero.
Yeah. So maybe could we also not only look at the research but also score it under your criteria so it's a part of our, I mean,
that makes a lot of sense.
It seems like we should be following the process, which I think you laid out a really great process. And if it doesn't fit one of the four, it seems like before we say that amount, whatever amount it is, that it should go through that.
Okay. I would reiterate that, and I would also say that, I mean, because we're taking a special opportunity here for transparency's sake, having that scoring makes a lot of sense. But I also think you can perhaps link it under the portfolio that includes the Cooper Jones Committee. That's a real direct link to an existing program-specific thing within the WTSC umbrella.
Oh, I was just trying to get his attention.
Well, the other thing to also consider is that Secretary Fox from the United States Department of Transportation has requested that every state do a pedestrian assessment. And so that's going to happen in May or May 7th. So is that something that can be tailored into the request from USDOT as well, is to do these pedestrian assessments? I will tell you, we were up by 20 fatalities in pedestrians this year. It was from last year we had 50. This year we're, well, I should say 2013 was 50. And in 2014 they're up to 77 pedestrian fatals. So the data is driving that direction as far as pedestrian fatals, mainly in the urban areas and those kinds of things. But I think you could look at a lot of different links between the state requirements and potentially federal requests for states to do these assessments and then to address pedestrian safety. But I think scoring it as well provides that level of scrutiny that we need to make sure that it meets the guidelines.
Yeah, I think the fact that it's a federal request, hopefully there's a commitment later on by the federal government to commit more funds towards that effort.
I hope so.
Which would benefit the states.
Yeah, and they've had, I think it was up to 8 states that they provided funds to do pedestrian-type projects. I think one of them was Houston, and a lot of them were the bigger cities.
Sure.
We did not have in this state, we would just not have met the qualifications, but still, we still have a significant pedestrian problem. So.
All right, Jerry, now comes the difficult work of creating a motion on the fly and recording it correctly. So it sounds like what we have is a motion to amend the grant approval list to include an allocation for pedestrian safety projects up to $60,000. And these projects will be scored using the grant criteria and to be determined at a future meeting in 2015. That sound good? Any tweaks to that? All right, anybody want to make that motion?
So moved.
Second.
We have a move and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Well,
oh,
can, it seems like before we make that approval, we should go through the process of the looking at the data and scoring before we actually say it's approved.
I would agree for the individual projects. The number that Darren just gave.
Well, you're going to consider it, so you don't actually have to move on it if the data tells you otherwise.
Okay.
You can walk away from it.
Okay.
We've just allocated. We have approved it. If we don't get, I would say this, if we, the part of the application scoring has a data component to it. So by requiring the scoring, we're going to require that shown. If we, you got two non-responsive applications that didn't even meet criteria. If we get pedestrian applications that don't meet the criteria, they won't be funded either. So, Chris, Pat raises a good concern. Are you comfortable with the scoring process embedding some data responsibility into this?
Yeah, in particular, if we're going to work closely with DOT on identifying those locations, I think we have a high degree of comfort in our cooperation with them and identifying those specific locations and then building the project around those locations.
Okay.
So I think there might be just a little confusion. Is, do we think that this is going to be individual grants that will go out, or is this going to be a cooperative grant agreement between the Traffic Safety Commission and Department of Transportation to do those projects?
So
I just want to make sure that we're clear, you know, as far as the process, will we be soliciting individual grants, or is this something that if we identify a project, we could use those funds for that?
It seems like it would be better to have it. I mean, if it's data-driven as to where, if there's specific issue, I mean, I guess it depends on the type of project. Is it more, does it become more educational prevention, or is it actual structural changes or monitoring or signage?
These funds specifically can only be used for behavior, so it'd be education and enforcement. These funds couldn't be used for any engineering type fixes. So,
several questions for John. Was the focus on state roads and interstates, or in general throughout the state?
I think in general throughout the state. I mean, if the data takes us to a focus area relative to the state system, you know,
right.
So be it. But I think the interest was more just putting this out there in areas that it might be the most beneficial.
I agree with that.
And if I could just add, in terms of, from the staff perspective, in terms of the difference between the two options, administering sort of a separate call for proposals is not insignificant in terms of our staff time for doing it, reviewing them, outreach, that sort of thing. So if we could develop a process that we work more closely with DOT in identifying specific locations, and then maybe reach out to those organizations to see if we can build a project, that would be probably where our interest lies.
Chris, how about this? How about if we, instead of you going through an outreach process, we limit it to the state agencies that are members of the commission? So if Department of Licensing, Department of Education, you know, had a behavioral idea to submit, they could do that too. Unless, John, you have any objection to that? Or?
No, maybe just in thinking in terms of process, if the first step in this is looking at the data and seeing where that takes us, then maybe that starts to determine partnerships, outreach.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman? If I might just ask a little question. Chris, would it be possible to structure something like this, like we did last year for the distracted driving, high emphasis visibility, like patrols, and just do your research for the targeted areas, and put out some money for a high visibility emphasis for those specific areas as a kind of a pilot project to see if it works? Would that be easier than trying to do another request for proposals?
I think that's kind of beyond the scope of this meeting. We want to just get this
thing
approved and then talk about those details once we get the commissioner's intent recorded in a vote. But I think what we're saying is, even though it's not in the motion, is we're not asking staff to go out for a big call for this amount of money in this short period of time. we're looking at examining the data that we have on hand and see where it leads. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
All right. So we have a motion on the floor. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed? Hearing none, passes unanimously. And then we have passed the grant slate as amended in its entirety, and we are on to item four, which is a much less discussion, hopefully, which is the approval of minutes from October 2014 and January 2015. Do I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Motion and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Hearing none, minutes passed unanimously, and now we're at item five, which is a presentation regarding State Farm.
Now we're on the fun stuff, the easy stuff. Well, my name is John Van Dyke, and I'm trying to get out of this program here first, and then I'll leave it. And the governor, our governor, has requested of our government agencies that we look for opportunities to work collaboratively with the private sector and not just Governor Inslee, but many governors before him. And we have had one such collaboration for a very long time. So we thought it fitting that we take a little time on the commission agenda, thank you for that, to recognize this collaborative effort, take you down memory lane a little bit, and show our appreciation to our friends at State Farm for the amazing things that they've done to support traffic safety education in our schools. So, to begin with,
is it on the desktop right there?
It's on the desktop, I was thinking back on when we started our efforts, and really they date back to probably about 2001, 2002. I'm going to pass these around. These will give you some visuals of, a project that we're currently engaged in. But the first project that we did with State Farm happened back when the legislature passed the intermediate driver license law. And that left us with a problem. Parents of newly licensed drivers were now faced with enforcing some new requirements that were aimed at reducing deaths involving teen drivers. Requirements that restricted passengers in the vehicles and the hours of driving. So we needed to engage parents, educate parents about this new law and enroll them in the process of helping us enforce the law. We knew we couldn't enforce our way out of this. So, but we didn't have any money for an air ride or the development of the PSA, so we went to State Farm and we worked together to come up with a plan of attack. And that included the development of a PSA, and then State Farm used their ability as a large corporation with the air buys that they're currently doing and gave us all of the bonus media that they had from their air buys to get this message out on the airway. So what we ended up with was an air buy worth about $200,000 if we would have had to pay for it out of our budget. And this particular ad. Give me a hand here with some technical issues I'm having with this computer. It's not.
It's loading slowly.
I'm a State Farm agent, but a parent, too.
And as a parent, you need to know there's been a change in Washington law affecting teens when they get their first driver's license and new rules for parents. Parents now have to spend 50 hours driving with their teen, and new teen drivers are restricted in the number of other teens in their car. Contact your State Farm agent or go to the Washington Traffic Safety Commission website for details. It's making the roads safer for all of us.
So that was our first effort. Our second one was an outreach effort in the schools to promote seatbelt use. And it's a project we call Click It and Ticket. And I'm going to show a little news clip that will give you an idea how that project works.
In 5 years, with all the latest news, weather, and sports, number one in Western Washington, this is King 5 News.
Wilson Holmes County High Schoolers get rewarded for showing up to school with their seatbelt buckle. A Click It and Ticket event was held this morning at Snohomish High School and two other schools. Students who arrived wearing seatbelts received a ticket that they could trade in for prizes. A lucky student at each school won a $124 gift card. That $124 is how much drivers would have to pay if they received a seatbelt citation. Police and state troopers statewide are conducting nighttime seatbelt emphasis patrols this month.
So, the real home run for this collaboration, I think, is what we call our State Farm $500 grant project. With the Click It and Ticket project, and with other projects that we've done, we've basically found ourselves knocking on the doors of schools, trying to, you know, get school administrators and teachers to pay attention to traffic safety issues and take on projects where they're promoting education about traffic safety issues. And what we found, and what, you know, all of us who've been in that position have found, is that schools have a lot of things on their plates. There are a lot of things competing for the attention of school administrators and teachers and advisors and even parent volunteers. There's bullying, there's teen suicide, graduation, the cost of college. I mean, just a lot of things. And so we were told, stand in line. Even though vehicle collisions are the number one cause of death for teenagers. So we thought we should get cuts to the front of the line. But still, we were told, stand in line. So we, with our collaboration with State Farm, came up with an idea. And that was, and frankly, based on our friends at DSHS and the DBHR projects, the idea of offering a stipend for the school programs that engaged students in educational peer-to-peer efforts to promote awareness about two of the three leading causes of teen crashes: distracted driving and impaired driving. So, since that project began in February of 2012, we have over 325 schools involved doing these projects. So, from stand in line to 325 school projects to date, we've really opened up the door and gotten a lot of students engaged in these educational efforts. So for this reason, we thought, and in addition to the fact that we recently got yet another contribution from State Farm of $50,000 toward the cost of this project, thank you Ty and Kevin, and please stand, we thought we needed to recognize the work that you have done in helping us to promote traffic safety. We could not have done this without you. So if you gentlemen would please come up here. We have Darren, we'll let you.
So when we started this Target Zero philosophy over 15 years ago, you know, a lot of it was governmental agencies trying to work together, but understanding that we have to stretch beyond just our government borders to be able to reach our targeted audience. And thank heavens for private partners that are able to step in and to assist and make a difference in some of those things that sometimes we just don't have the resources to do. So having State Farm being able to be a great partner with us over the last 4 years, helping us with the teen driving and working with the high school students, and that makes a huge difference. And so I think we're close to, what, 400,000 now?
In the total amount that State Farm has contributed has been, it's closer to $600,000 to $700,000 over the years. So it's a huge investment.
So
I'm going to stop talking and allow you to just share some thoughts with the commissioners and with the audience on kind of your perception of the project and how things have been going.
Thank you, Darren. I handle community relations and philanthropy for State Farm. I do a lot of behind-the-scenes work, and it's really our local agents who are involved in the communities and interacting with your school. So I've invited one of our local agents to introduce himself and say just a little something about what he does, and then I'll...
Sure. Yeah, well, thank you all for having us. It's a privilege to be here, and it's pretty neat to hear about all the great work that you guys are doing across the state. First of all, it's a privilege, too, to be associated with a company like State Farm that obviously not only cares about ensuring citizens across the country and the state, but also making a difference in our community. So I've been with State Farm about 8 years. Hard to believe, but I've been an agent for about 3, and as a business owner, I have the opportunity to get involved in the local community. So one just kind of example of that is partnering with North Thurston High School. Perhaps some of you have met Joe Polito. He runs a program there called Rams in Action. So it's sort of a volunteer club for the kids. And so I've gotten to partner with them on a couple of things. One of the fun things is I bought some called drunk goggles, and so you put them on and it simulates what it's like driving drunk. I can tell you from putting them on, it kind of gives me a stomachache. I also bought a remote control car for the kids to try and drive with these goggles on, so that's kind of fun to watch. But again, just wanted to say thanks for having us here, and thank you all for the work that you do. It makes a difference. You know, we're kind of dealing with dollars and abstractions and stuff, but it makes a difference. It's hard to get through to kids, but these kids are hearing the message, and it is making a difference in their behavior. So thank you again.
Thank you, Kevin. And, you know, we get hundreds upon hundreds of grant applications every year, and if it was up to me, I would fund every single one of those because they are great organizations with worthwhile projects. Unfortunately, I have a budget, and you all understand budget. So we have to take almost 1,000 grant applications per year and whittle them down to about 50. And our grant range is from $5,000 to $50,000. This year, we only have one $50,000 recipient. And we have 3 focus areas that we look at: teen driver safety, education, and community development. And when you think about what the Traffic Commission is doing, and particularly the Young Driver Task Force, we're almost hitting on all 3 of those: teen driver safety, education, because we're in the schools, and when you think about what we're instilling in our youth, habits that will last them for a lifetime, we're also building the community. So it's very important that we align ourselves as a company with the organizations that share the same values we do. And the Washington Traffic Commission, it's a no-brainer when we review that application. I got to tell you that the reason that we come year after year at the level that we do is because of the work that Jonna does with the Young Driver Task Force. And Jonna has been a fabulous and great team worker. She has wonderful ideas. She's brought those ideas to us, and we just say, yeah, we'll do that. And sometimes we'll make recommendations, and she's very flexible. We just enjoy this collaborative effort that we have, and we hope that we continue this in years to come.
Thank you, Tom.
And, you know, we do check presentations to the organizations that we fund, and we come prepared with a photo op check. And we already did the photo this morning before the meeting. And we don't do this normally, but since I control the money, we're foregoing the proverbial, the check's in the mail, and we brought the $50,000 check to the
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
The Dare from Mexico.
No, quite. So you can see that how valuable private partnerships are with us. Ty has been working with our committee developing the traffic safety conference in October, and so really appreciate all the participation and the support that you give us.
And you stand over here too, because you know it, when you have the partnerships, it really relies upon great partnership or great relationships and people. And like you said a minute ago, when Jonna speaks, people listen, and you finally usually just do what Jonna says.
Yeah.
And so, but she has been a stalwart with this group, working with the Young Driver Task Force, working with State Farm, working with the high schools, working with our Target Zero managers out in the field, with a lot of the projects and things that have gone on. So Jonna is to be thanked extensively for helping be the outreach liaison for the traffic
safety. That
safety.
Wasn't how this was done. Off message.
Yeah. Well, and I will just mention Joe Polito, who you mentioned a few minutes ago from North Thurston. They their group came up to the Senate and the House and testified on behalf of the distracted driving bill. So it was nice to have that component of our youth up there learning about the legislative process, but also up there testifying and providing that testimony that we need for our legislators to hear. So, you know, just like Russell Wilson, we have our own special quarterbacks. And this is a special award for Ty Cordova for his desk. But it's our State Farm Insurance Project Quarterback, April 16, 2015. So this will be a little... And also from the commission, we don't have the really cool chief coins that the patrol has, but we have one that's a little bit... It's almost better. So, but on behalf of the commission, thank you very much for all you've done. And then the last piece, because you know we just don't believe in giving one thing,
yeah.
Is a special insincere appreciation. You saw this morning, but this is on behalf of State Farm and the High School Grant Project. This is just a special award from the Traffic Safety Commission and recognizing the work that you do. So I'll hand that to you. Where'd that $50,000 check go?
It's in the bank.
Thank you all for that presentation. Thank you for your efforts. Next item is item number 6, FHWA targets as a requirement of MAP 21. John, take
okay.
it away.
Thank you. And thank you for that discussion with the grant program. Very much appreciate that. I'll try to make up some of the time that, with this presentation as far as relative to that discussion. So I think at the last meeting there was a question and a request relative to MAP 21 and what the performance requirements might be, you know, associated with MAP 21. So what I wanted to do is just give you a very kind of high-level overview of MAP 21, how it relates to safety and safety investments, and hopefully answer some of the questions that you might have had from the last session. So just kind of in... make sure I know what we're doing here. Oh, good. Okay. So just in a very broad overview, MAP 21 is the federal legislation focused on the surface transportation system. It touches in a lot of areas, including highway safety, and for the Department of Transportation, a lot of that is associated with the Highway Safety Improvement Program. But it also is directed towards highway infrastructure, freight and freight movement programs, as well as congestion and congestion mitigation and air quality kinds of things. So it really touches on all aspects of the surface transportation system. The focus with MAP 21, the focus areas, is to really start establishing a more performance-based program, overall program, and then when you think of the individual components of the program. And so we'll see when we talk about performance measures, targets, that's all associated with how do you make this overall program from a national perspective more performance-based. As it relates to safety and the safety investment side of things, some of this should look very familiar to us. I mean, we've been viewed as a national leader from a state perspective. The Target Zero strategic plan is held up nationally as an example of where we need to be going as a country. We've had a lot of interaction with the development of the MAP 21 requirements, and and the proposed rules. And so a lot of the things that MAP 21 requires or encourages are things that we're doing. And so we're in very good shape as it relates to, you know, new requirements coming out through the MAP 21 process. It does require states to have a statewide strategic plan associated with safety. We've had one for a long time. It really encourages performance-based and lays out performance-managed expectations. It encourages states to be quantitative. And so as you think about, you know, data-driven use of analysis tools, those kinds of things, strongly encourages that. Again, we've been doing that for a long time. Collaboration and working together, again, I think we're held up as an example. And then it really starts to get into the coordination of plans. And so as you think about the state strategic plan for highway safety, the highway safety program and plan, and the highway safety improvement plan and programs, it really looks to bringing those together in a coordinated way. When we talk about performance, it really gets into that, I think, much more directly. It does introduce measures, requires the use of measures. I'll talk a little bit later about some specific measures that MAP 21 prescribes. And then as MAP 21 is being developed, and it's still in development, the final rule hasn't come out and is expected to come out in this coming September, there were some additional requirements added through separate legislation targeting federal highways, and that was to incorporate non-motorized safety performance measures into the measuring and reporting requirements associated with MAP 21 and the MAP 21 legislation. And like I said, the final rule is expected to be out by September 30th of this year. While we've seen a lot of the rules, proposed rulemaking associated with MAP 21 and kind of the core measures and you know, performance measures and targets, we haven't seen anything yet as it relates to non-motorized. Not sure that we will. It may come out for the first time in the final rule. So that's kind of one of the things that we're all looking for as we hear more. Like I mentioned, it really is focused on bringing together all of the plans from a measuring and reporting perspective. And so when you think of, for us as a state, Target Zero as the strategic plan, the Department of Transportation, our reporting requirements in conjunction with and coordinated with the Traffic Safety Commission. And really then if you look at from a highway system safety plan and the highway safety improvement plan and program, bringing those two more closely aligned. And when it comes to measures, it's directing us, it establishes some core highway safety performance measures and is looking for consistency between the highway safety plan and the highway safety improvement program relative to those measures and the targets associated with them. Kind of getting into then the performance measures associated with MAP 21 and highway safety, it prescribes four what they've described as core measures. And it's really looking at numbers of fatalities. It's looking at it from all public roads perspective, so it's not just state highways, it's all public roads. It's prescribing a measure associated with fatality rate, and as well, number of serious injuries and serious injury rate. And so those are measures that we will be directed to incorporate. So again, you think of how we do things and what we've done in the past, a lot of work relative to number of fatalities, some work relative to the use of rate and how we use rate. Like I mentioned, or a couple other focus areas with MAP 21 is older driver and pedestrian fatalities. While it's not as prescriptive, we are directed to be measuring and tracking that category, as well as high-risk rural roads. I'm not the expert from a funding standpoint, but my understanding there has been historically a set-aside amount for high-risk rural roads. I believe that set-aside is no longer there, but we are required to be continue to track and monitor collisions and fatalities on high-risk rural roads. Highway rail crossing continues to be a focus area as well. Like I mentioned, non-motorized, I think there's more to come as it relates to that. It also, you know, it's interesting because MAP 21 talks about allowing states to set targets as it relates to measures, but it also is prescribing the method to set targets. And so it's kind of interesting as far as how that is kind of unfolding. It describes a 5-year rolling average as it relates to kind of those four core measurement areas. So a 5-year rolling average, looking at history, using that 5-year rolling average then, in linear regression to forecast forward what we should expect from a reduction standpoint. So from basically from a target setting standpoint. It applies that same approach to all four of the fatality and rates and serious injury and serious injury rates. And so like I said, I think that we're expecting that to be prescribed in the final rule. Like I said, it looks at high-risk rural roads and older drivers, and it does have penalties associated with these measures. And so for states, as we set targets, it's looking at how we are our progress towards meeting those targets. For high-risk rural roads, there's a special rule associated with, like I mentioned, the continuing to track and monitor data relative to high-risk rural roads. If we see an increase in that category, it prescribes funding to be allocated or obligated towards high-risk rural roads. For us as a state, you know, what's in the proposed rule at this point is something to the effect of at least 200% of traditional funding used for high-risk rural roads needs to be targeted there. We've been above that, I believe, as a state anyway. And so while the penalty piece isn't, you know, we think we're fine with that, we are going to continue to focus on from a high-risk rural road. Older driver and pedestrian fatalities, the penalties associated with that are just simply we need to make that a focus within our strategic plan. And so it's you know, it talks about penalties in kind of those terms. So getting into the weeds a little bit, this is a graphic of what the target setting approach might look like as it relates to one category, in this case fatalities. And so you kind of see the green line is just the number of fatalities by year. So this lower green line, the maroon line, I don't know if you can see the color very well, is what a five-year rolling average would look like associated with that same data. It's just simply looking at the number I had this year and the number of previous 4 years and averaging those. And so using that to project forward. One of the concern areas that we had raised had been, you know, if you're going to look at this as a target, there is just normal variation that occurs year to year, just statistically. And so we think what will come out in the final rule is, you know, a projected target line, but really focused on that 70% upper prediction limit. That's just a confidence interval from a statistical standpoint that you'd expect normal variation. And so trying to make this not overly prescriptive in terms of the targets, but accounting for, like I said, just the natural variation that occurs. One of the interesting things as we think about target zero will be, in this example, fatalities. So we've had targets in relative to the target zero plan. We said get to zero by 2030. This introduces a little bit different kind of way, a different way to measure and measure progress. And so one of the things as we kind of talked about at the end, but as we think about how we have talked about performance in this state, this is a little bit different way of talking about performance. And I think one of the things that we're going to have to be focused on as we go through a target zero update process is how do we want to be talking about performance as it relates to highway safety. Just kind of flipping through, same process like I mentioned relative to rates for fatalities, the five-year rolling average projecting forward, and same thing for serious, serious injury and number of serious injuries. So some of the things to consider is as this unfolds, and again as we see the final rule, and as we really go through the target zero updating process, is how many measures should we have? I mean, it gives us some ability to look rural versus urban, prescribe some measures. It's kind of that balance of complexity or over-complexity relative to what do we really need to manage the programs. How do we go about the target setting process? And like I said, it's pretty prescriptive, but again, as we think target zero, how are we going to be approaching that? There are requirements in MAP 21 for safety specific to MPOs. We've already started that outreach process with them. It's kind of interesting how we need to identify and report is from a state perspective to federal highways. MPOs reporting is to the state, so to the Department of Transportation. When it comes to penalties, it's really penalties applied at the state level, not at the MPO level. And so kind of how this all comes together or needs to come together, I think, is part of what's out in front of us as we work through this. As far as the target setting piece, I should have mentioned, we have a one-year period after the final rule to actually establish targets. The MPOs actually have another 180 days following our establishment. So there is a little bit of time.
But just coordination between the department and the commission and the MPOs, I think, will be key. Part of what's been a focus is the evaluation process, and so when you think about Target Zero, we've already started talking about how will we evaluate success and progress relative to that plan, but this kind of takes it some levels further with that. Mentioned consistency in reporting, and you know, part of this is the data requirements. Again, we're ahead of a lot of states relative to the data and the quality of data that we have, but you know, as we think about measures, it's certainly the data piece has to be in mind as far as availability of data to actually inform the measures. And then ultimately, I think this takes us into how do we think about project program safety programming and project selection. So again, a lot of work in front of us, but I think timing is good. You know, as the rule comes out and as we're in the Target Zero update process, I think we have the opportunity to really bring these things together in a timely way. So that was it. I hope that kind of gives you an overview at least of Map 21 and what the
questions for John. John, I would like to get that presentation from like maybe emailing it to Darren.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, we can get it out to you. If you want to send it, if you can send it to us.
Yeah, you've got it. And
okay.
Be great. Great. All right. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Now we're on to the legislative report. And I don't see Shelley Baldwin. Are you going to do a Shelley Baldwin impersonation today?
I am.
Okay.
Thank you for allowing me to have that Shelley Baldwin impersonation. Shelley, unfortunately, she sustained an injury yesterday and with her foot and will not be able to be in today. So she's fine. She just has to keep her foot up. So in relation to John's presentation, yesterday I had the opportunity to be with Federal Highways and with FMCSA and NHTSA, and we talked about specifically these performance measures. It's unclear at this point when those performance measures will actually come out. And this was supposed to be part of MAP 21, which we've already surpassed MAP 21, and we're continuing in the continuing resolution stage. So we asked yesterday, and I said the concern that we're hearing nationwide is once these performance measures actually come out and states are required to meet these performance measures, what is the penalty? And I said because it wouldn't make any sense to take funds away from states if they're not able to meet. I said that would seem almost counterintuitive. And I said, well, what we're really looking at is we would evaluate what programs you're actually implementing. And then looking at if you're doing something and it's not getting any results, can you, you know, those things may not be funded. We had to look at something completely different. So that would be part of the process. That is still yet to be determined, but yet it was a very interesting discussion with Federal Highways, and I think that they're still kind of wondering how they're going to actually implement and then working with the different states. Because not every state is clearly as advanced as we are with, you know, our collaboration and with the data that we have. So the legislative report, I'm just going to touch on a couple of things, is at the very beginning of the session, Senate Bill 5046 was introduced as a language fix for the commission. And what it was specifically addressing was, and I only bring this up because it died, is the governor may designate an employee of the governor's office familiar with Traffic Safety Commission to act on behalf. This was originally part of the 1982 legislation. Somehow it did not get into the actual codified version, so it was supposed to be a language fix. It's immediately passed the Senate and has stalled in the House Transportation Committee. So it doesn't really change anything. It was kind of almost just a language change, but just make sure that you were aware of that. The other one was our distracted driving bill, which was our agency request legislation. Went through the Senate. It passed the Senate 35 to 14. Seemed like we had a lot of good momentum. Went to the House, and the House Transportation, it died. So primarily what we've heard is people didn't want to give up their phones. They wanted to have an all-distracted driving bill, not just a technology-distracted driving bill. So there was some issues it was actually set for exec session on a Monday and Tuesday. It did not make it out of the exec session. And when it was rescheduled, there was about 6 amendments that were placed on it. And it's now stalled. So hopefully, through this session, we've learned quite a bit, and that this next off season is that we would continue to work the bill and with the legislators, and then reintroduce in 2016. So
I'd like to give you a little more feedback on that, because I've been asking why. It seemed kind of like a little bit of a no-brainer, but I heard it got some law enforcement pushback as well. A couple different things. One, that, you know, how is it, it's like another thing that can't be enforced, and how is it different than a reckless driving statute that's already out there? And then the other is, I don't think there's a lot of understanding of the benefits that the federal money that we will get from doing this and how they might impact the individual legislative districts either. I've heard that it's not completely dead. Like, if you found the right members to pull it to the floor, it still happens. But the dynamics of the horse trading right now don't favor it.
Right.
But I didn't have a good answer to that question when somebody asked me it, like, how will my district benefit from this federal money? Because, you know, federal money gets thrown around a lot, and they're not real clear understanding of how it would impact.
Yeah, and those federal funds would be used for educational campaigns as well as enforcement campaigns. And right now, with our you drive, or you text, you drive, you get a ticket. What am I?
Text, talk, ticket.
Yeah, there's the other one, though. That,
you text, you drive, you lose.
Yeah.
Pay.
Yeah.
Pay.
You pay. That's
pay.
What it is. You pay.
Pay.
Well, I always said is you text, you drive, you die. But the funds would be available for those. We actually have 100 agencies right now that are part of the distracted driving mobilization currently. So that would actually expand our ability to do distracted driving more than just once a year as far as the mobilization, as well as doing additional campaigns across the state and
so
addressing the targeted audience.
Is it the same kind of thing, half media, half enforcement, and is it like overtime hours reimbursement, or how does it exactly work?
It would be, I'm not sure the actual, I think it's about a 50-50 split, because that's what we try to do, you know, so with the grants, but really trying to get to where, how can we affect the driving behavior, not only our teens, but also the adults. So, and then you saw the tragedy in Kent just about four nights ago, where a teen, and what he said was, all I did was look down at my phone. He didn't have it in his hand. He just said, I just looked down at my phone, and he crossed the center line and killed the 25-year-old Federal Way woman. So it's, that was part of what this bill was trying to drive at, is to get your eyes up on the road and away from the phones. So Q13 did a little spot on it a couple nights ago. The families asked why the driver was not arrested, and was wanting to know why our state law is not stronger. Because now here's this 25-year-old woman who has had a son who's now left the family, you know, basically, you know, her child, and, you know, it's the impacts, the tragedies that are associated with it. So it's, and then trying to clarify the law so that law enforcement would have a stronger impact as far as enforcement. That was part of what the bill was intended to do. Worked with some of the cellular phone industry. We worked with law enforcement and those groups to help us. How do we fix this? Because it's, you know, right now you can Twitter and you can Snapchat and you can check your stock options and you can check Facebook, and you're perfectly legal to do that right now. So that was one of those things, is to clarify, to actually strengthen and enhance the law. So we will be approaching the commission again this next year to help support moving that again as agency request legislation. I think last year we couldn't get it out of the Senate rules. This year we made it all the way to the House Transportation Committee. So we'll see where we can go this next year. So we made quite a bit of headway.
So, Darren, is there any plans to, I mean, it sounds like, it seems like one of those bills, yeah, given that feedback, that it would be good to go back to folks and get reconvene some people in the interim, mm-hmm. and see if there's language that clarifies that, or just an education campaign to get more legislative support prior to seeing the bill, so that, I mean, every year you get a little few more people that remember that, oh yeah, this is really okay.
Well, in the Senate, we saw on the Senate floor debate, there were several that said, you know, I was totally and completely opposed to any distracted driving bills. But now seeing several videos, having some personal education, I have changed my mind. One of them said, I'm a libertarian,
and I don't believe we should have control over your in the car, but having moved over here to Olympia and seeing the problems that it's creating in our environment, I am completely supportive of this bill. So it's, you know, unfortunately we see a lot of different tragedies associated with distracted driving. They did the slot that they did a couple weeks ago with Bonnie Lake PD, they said that 25% of their crashes alone are associated to distracted driving, which almost correlates to the national level of 26% of all crashes are involving a cellular device. So very similar perspectives. So it's, I think we have some work to do in the off season if we can't get, you know, it did have a fiscal note attached to it, so potentially I guess it's still in play, but I think as you said, between the politics, we're not sure. The impaired driving bill is moving forward. That one addresses the ignition interlock. It affects the implied consent warning for blood. It also addresses some things about having a statewide phlebotomy program for law enforcement. It opens the door for that. Administrative license suspensions, a variety of different things. 24-hour program, a 24/7 program will still continue to be a pilot at this stage. At least that's the amendment that went in yesterday. And then, so that one is still continuing to move forward. The big one is that we've seen several versions of this, and this is a pedestrian fatality review board. The Senate version gives us an FTE for the Traffic Safety Commission. The House version gives us half of an FTE to run a pedestrian review board or a council. And yesterday in the House, there was some very specific requirements that were added as far as who would be a part of that pedestrian review board, and they added an amendment yesterday for a traffic engineer. So I'm not sure if that'll be you, John, but that was a very specific request made in the amendment yesterday. The pedestrian review board would make a recommendation to the governor's office as well as the legislative transportation committees on what they find from their review as far as any engineering pieces or behavioral things that they could do for pedestrian safety. Yesterday, an amendment was also adopted that this measure, this review board, would expire in June 30th of 2019. So, you know, it was originally 2021, but it's now 2019. So those just some changes there. But it would allow us to look at a lot of the fatalities and I think even some serious injury crashes involving pedestrians. And when you look at it, there that would have been almost 350 cases to review with a panel of about, I think it's almost 30 to 40 people. So that's pretty extensive. And then to have to manage all those cases was another piece. So that one is still moving forward. That one passed out of the House yesterday. So we'll see where that one goes, because if it does pass, we will either end up with either a half or another full-time FTE here in the commission. So, and I believe that the impaired driving bill, if it passes, adds another FTE. So we may end up with two FTEs out of this legislative session. So, and I know staff's going, where are we going to put them? So we have these new cubicles with ladders. We have bunk cubicles. So we are looking for some ways to address that with our current space. And part of it might be this little spot right next door. So that just kind of gets you a little up to date on some of the legislative requests. The only thing is I just wanted to point out, Jerry, Mike, if you both just kind of stand up and be seen. Both Jerry and Mike came in March, and we're very excited for them to be a new additions to our agency. We really want to appreciate Pat, Commissioner Kohler, for allowing us to steal Mike. He's been a great addition for us. And Mike's going to be handling the Strategic Highway Safety Plan rewrite. So much like what Debbie Besser did 3 years ago, can't believe it was 3 years ago, Mike will be doing, and Chris and John will be the steering committee chairs for the Strategic Highway Safety Plan rewrite. So we are in the process. Our hope is that it will be done and completed, and we'll have the governor's signature October of 2016, or
no later than that.
Yes. You want to share that? Right now, we double filled a spot, and that's with Mike, and that is with support with Department of Transportation. It has provided us the funding to help fill his position this year. So that has been a great partnership. And then, unfortunately, there is a superstar that is going to be retiring at the end of this year, and so we will be backfilling, if you'd stand up, superstar John Van Dyke's position. So that helps offset us, and then Mike will be backfilling on John's position. Jerry came to Thurston County. Very excited to have you here. He was a Target Zero manager. As you saw, many of the grants from Thurston County written by Jerry before he was actually hired. So we didn't have any conflict of interest. But Jerry, you hail from Pennsylvania. This is our second Pennsylvania State University graduate working in our office. So I don't know what it is. You know, we're attracting people from all over the world. So great to have Jerry a part of this with our office here.
We interviewed for Jerry's position, so that is a Target Zero manager position with the Thurston County Prosecutor's Office will be filled in hopefully another 2 weeks.
Yes.
Get a maximum. They already went through in their final interviews today.
Excellent. So Jerry actually backfilled Shelley Baldwin's position when we made the legislative liaison spot. So just lastly, a couple things is Erica Steinman, our communications consultant, on Friday she had her baby. And so we wanted to congratulate her with her new arrival. Her name is Lydia Marie Steinman, 7 pounds, 13.2 ounces. So... we're very excited for her. She'll be gone for a few weeks. But I told her to get right back to work. Our agency, in conjunction with some representatives from the patrol, representatives from the Liquor Control Board, we're participating in the National Cooperative Highway Research Program in NHTSA. It's a grant looking at best practices on marijuana and what's happening within our state and what's happening across the country. So there's lots of different representatives from the judiciary, from law enforcement, from toxicology, from impaired driving programs, all around the state, or all around the country. And we'll be working with them. And the first meeting is in July, and they're having subsequent meetings, but helping to develop some strategies for states that are dealing with the legalization of marijuana in their states. So it's a huge project. But we have been fortunate to be able to be involved in a lot of those discussions. John mentioned how we are recognized nationwide for our strategic highway safety plan and the collaboration that we have. We'll be joining John Milton in what they call a domestic scan, and they're actually looking. That's part of another NCHRP or the National Cooperative Highway Research Program NCHRP, and doing a domestic scan, talking about how we have really changed the culture of traffic safety in this state and continue to do that. And that's one of the things that we strive to do or are continuing to look at is how do we change the culture of safety in our state. So that will be one issue. And then I mentioned the bicycle pedestrian assessment. Are you still coming to that?
I'm not. I'm not going to be able to make it. They're talking about the one in the industrial areas at Seattle.
In Soto, yeah.
Yeah, no, it sounds like a great project, and unfortunately I'm not going to be able to make it.
So May 7th, we'll be participating with that, project. And then the conference you've all received information on October 13th and the 15th. And then I just wanted to mention, in 2013 we had 436 fatalities. This year, we're looking at right now, we're kind of at the preliminary number. Right now, we're at 459. And preliminary analysis shows, right here. Just wanted to give you kind of a heads up on this, is impaired driving really hasn't changed as far as the number. We had 224 as compared to 220 last year, just slightly up. But speed-related fatalities this year were down by 25, so which is a good measure. Hopefully some of the projects that we're working over in Kitsap County, and here in Thurston County will help us to identify some best practices to address that continuing. In attention, a went up by four, young drivers stayed the same, run off the roadway, dropped, and so it's kind of like, where did we go up?
Yeah.
Well, then you look at pedestrians, and the pedestrians went up by 20,
wow.
Seven, actually.
Do we know specifically where those occurred?
We're doing all the work now to identify all where those are occurring, and then we can have our GIS analyst help us to identify with the maps on that. So that will help with our pedestrian piece there. And then the other piece that we saw 18 more driver fatalities, and we saw almost 18 fewer passengers that were killed. So, you know, instead of having a multi-car fatality, it was just, you know, a driver. So there's lots of analysis that still needs to be done. We have seen, as far as marijuana-related fatalities, went from 62 to 98 in 2014. The question we're still working on is how much of that was the active THC in the blood. So can we show that there was impairment? But we have seen an increase in those related fatalities. So, with that, any questions for me?
So, Darren, can we expect next meeting to get that analysis?
We'll have a lot more. The FARS numbers are not final until December 31st of this year, or last year. But we will have, you know, at that six-month mark, we usually have most of the information in, and we'll have a more detailed analysis. Yeah. So,
Darren, just a quick clarification on the marijuana numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So the 98 is testing positive for THC in the blood. What you don't know,
testing positive for the presence of marijuana.
Right, but not for active THC. That analysis isn't in yet.
Yeah, we're still working on that
great
piece of it.
Thank you. That's what I need.
Yeah.
So we are a little bit over time. Does anybody have any questions for Darren or anything else they'd like to share before we end the meeting? All right, hearing nothing, thanks everybody, and we are adjourned.
Thank you very much.
How are you doing, Mike? Good? Okay. I felt you yesterday, so I can't do it again. I'm surviving. Yeah, I fell down some of the stairs. And my stomach couldn't cut this.